Welcome back to 501C TV. I'm your host, Janelle Harris, and this is the podcast that talks to system change leaders, thought leaders, nonprofits, and nonprofit partners. And this morning I have with me, I'm very excited, Umberto Rossi with the Give Back Community. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm so happy to have you here. This is one of these like gems of a foundation and a nonprofit that I'm really excited to learn more about and also have our viewers listen to, because I think in like pretty short amount of time, you've done some pretty incredible things and set up some really amazing programs and systems.
Right.
So I want to get into that and make sure everyone listening knows all about what you guys are doing right here in our backyard and in a lot of other places too. I think that's important. So without further ado, I will let you intro yourself. Give us a background. Where did you grow up? How did you end up in West Palm Beach here and then doing what we're doing today with the Give Back Community?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. Mm-hmm. I really think that what you do, it's really important because you give a voice to, you know, local leaders.
Yes.
That are doing really the hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're most of the time selfless people.
Absolutely.
That day in, day out, they're always focused on helping other people. Mm-hmm. And I think we need more voice.
I agree.
Right.
Well, as I told you off camera, it is like, it's stunning to me how many nonprofits we have right in our backyard that are just doing like incredible things.
Yeah.
So every Wednesday when I come in here, it's like my favorite day of the week because it really mm-hmm. fills up my soul. I'm like, I get to meet amazing people that are just out there doing such incredible work. So thank you for being here. And I'm very excited for everyone to listen to what you have to say.
Well, let me give you a little bit of background.
Sure.
In regards of where I come from. I'm from Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to the United States at 19 years old.
Okay.
I decided to go to university here in South Florida, in mm-hmm. West Palm Beach, in a small college called Palm Beach Atlantic.
Yes.
And I was a tennis player, so I came through, you know, the tennis program. And
that's what I was wondering. I was like, how out of all the places in the U.S. did you pick West Palm Beach? Okay, so that makes sense now. That connects the dots.
And so I was supposed to go and play in another college. But then I did a tryout, and I got to see West Palm Beach,
mm-hmm.
And this beautiful area. I fell in love with it, and I said, okay, this is the place that I want to,
awesome.
You know, live in. And in Italy, it's different because the education system, when you go to university, it's either you study or, let's say, you are a sports player and you want to turn pro,
mm-hmm.
you become pro. You try and become pro.
Got it.
So you don't have the possibility, like in the U.S., to do both.
To do both, which is awesome. Yeah, that's interesting.
So I said, okay, let's try and go to the United States. Long story short, we made it happen. And I started my freshman year very focused on tennis and not so much on the academic aspect.
It's hard. You have the beach and you have like Clematis
right.
Street and all
right.
the fun stuff down there. I get it.
So I was like a kid in a candy shop because,
right.
You know, for the first time, I don't live with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm on my own and I have a bunch of friends, my tennis teammates
right.
and in America.
Yes.
So that felt like that the first year. And then the second year, COVID happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it was 2020.
Got it.
And I had to make a choice between going back to Italy or staying. But I don't know if you remember, back then Italy was the country that got hit the most
yes.
by COVID.
Right.
Because it's such a small country mm-hmm. and there's a lot of older people. And I was the only Italian in my university that decided to stay in the U.S.
Really?
Because all of my friends went back home.
Okay.
But I think that I made the right choice because, first of all, back in Italy, it was a lockdown, very strict.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously here in South Florida, it was way less strict.
Right.
And so I was able to do my things. I was able to work out, to go out, to go for a run.
Sure.
You know, that it's something that you couldn't do in Italy. And so in the meantime, I had a bunch of friends that decided to stay. When things started to opening back up, after a few months of COVID here in Florida
mm-hmm.
and restaurants started to open,
right.
I decided to go on a local restaurant, Coracos Tacos in Clematis, with a couple friends.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one of them is Andrew, which is the co-founder of the Give Back Community.
Awesome.
And one of my best friends. And we just went there and we were eating outside, and it was a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time, we've been many times before to that restaurant, and we sat in the same place. But for the first time, something hit us very strongly. And it was seeing all these homeless people walking by as we were eating.
Right.
And so I told Andrew, I said, man, are you noticing that we're having such a good time and these guys are not able to get a quesadilla or a taco like we do?
Sure.
Let's do something about it. And I said, okay. So we ordered some extra food. And after dinner, we started to delivering it on, you know, Clematis and the Inner Coastal,
mm-hmm.
which is very downtown West Palm Beach.
Yeah.
And it was one of the first, to me, it was one of the most important experiences of my life, because it's almost like when you're colorblind and for the first time you see colors.
Right.
A new perspective was activated in my life by seeing other people suffering.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time, I was putting myself out there, you know, being useful and trying to help somebody.
Sure.
And what I've realized is that, wow, it's in the same streets that I live.
Absolutely.
Like, there's so much suffering.
Yes, yes.
And so I realized that in that hour where we were just, you know, feeding them and having a conversation, a regular conversation, it was something that literally changed the week, the month of, you know, these homeless friends that we were talking with.
And I also feel like an experience like that, if you've ever like given to somebody and it's like, it's really like resonated with you, you can't forget about it. You can't put it out of your mind. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering like if like even like a week or how many days afterwards were you still like thinking about that? Thinking about those people, right?
Mm-hmm.
That were out there.
The dopamine hit for a few hours, but then you want it back.
Yeah.
And so we decided every Friday night at 7 p.m., we will do this.
Okay.
No matter what.
I love that.
And school was getting back in, and we had a couple, you know, local students still in West Palm Beach. And, you know, people started showing up. Mm-hmm. Friends, tennis teammates that I have, soccer players from PBA. Professors.
That's awesome.
So the faculty too. And so, you know, week after week, this group was getting bigger and bigger. And we came to a point where we had more volunteers than homeless people.
Right.
So that was something. But
that's a wonderful problem.
Right.
To
that's
have.
A wonderful problem too.
Yeah, that's great.
But I feel that is something that was interesting to me, because I wanted my friends that were my same age to experience what I experienced a few months before.
Yeah, and you know what? And I think that's so amazing. And I did want to touch on that. Obviously, you're younger. I'm not going to ask your age, but I know you're younger than me. And I feel like that's a big thing. That's a life-changing thing. And to have that experience so young, I think, is really important. You know, I'm always like trying to tell my kids and try to – it's one thing to like talk about it and try to teach your kids to do the right thing and help other people. But when you actually like experience that firsthand, I think at a young age, I think that's awesome. That's huge, because that now, this will never leave you. I mean, yeah. You obviously went on to, you know, form this nonprofit, and which is amazing, and we'll talk about. But it's, I'm happy that this happened to you like so young in your life.
Yeah, and you know, something that I always share to my friends is, this is not a Friday thing. This is an everyday thing.
Right.
You know, and also, what do you do when no one is watching?
Mm-hmm.
I really think this is an important thing to have in the back of my mind,
mm-hmm.
every time. And I feel like I try to think about it as if I have a camera pointing at me 24/7, mm-hmm. and I have my future kids looking at
Absolutely. That.
And that kind of puts me in a perspective where, wow, it's not just about what I'm doing in front of you just because I want to look good.
Sure.
But also, okay, on Friday night, but it's also, there's also 6 other days of the week.
Absolutely.
And I need to, you know, have integrity and do it no matter what.
Mm-hmm. So from there, so we have this experience, we start this Friday night thing. How does it go from that to then saying, you know what, Andrew, let's form a nonprofit?
Yes.
How do you do that? Because I think it's really interesting, A, that you are younger, that you're able to accomplish all this and set that up. And for people listening, I think everyone sometimes has like a thought or a feeling like, I would really want to do this, but it's actually like executing it. That takes, that's a big thing. So I think people are interested to know like how you made that leap.
Yeah, so what we realized is that the more somebody's on the street, and the sooner they're gonna die.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it's the reality of it.
Right.
So at the beginning, we were very idealistic and we thought we're gonna save them all.
Right.
So we're gonna give them a job. But then we realized, well, I'm coming back on Friday, and Debbie, last Friday, she was so sharp and she didn't sound like she was using any drugs or alcohol.
Sure.
She felt like a normal person. But then how come next week she's mumbling and she's not able to have a communication? And then we realized, well, Debbie is bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, Robert has a crack addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start to see the reality of things.
Right.
And after a few months, we said, well, we're just feeding them. We're providing a conversation. We're bringing volunteers to get to experience that. But this is not enough for our homeless friends that really want to get back in their feet.
Right.
So we created a program that we called Give Back Jobs,
mm-hmm.
where we were basically connecting our homeless friends that were not using and were not doing drugs and alcohol, that really wanted to get back in their feet.
Mm-hmm.
They had a bad instance in their life.
Sure.
Let's say they were fired and they couldn't come up with the rent money. We were trying to connect them to local businesses or even big corporations.
Sure.
So we developed, I was a business major,
mm-hmm.
back in school, and you know, some of my professors had businesses.
Awesome.
And one of them had a car wash, and he still has a car wash called Mintigo.
Oh yeah.
And they're pretty big now,
mm-hmm.
but back then they just had one location in Southern.
Okay, interesting.
And we started to provide a few jobs for a few homeless friends. And a car wash was just the perfect situation because you don't have to be dressed up. And, you know, they were so nice. They were offering them locker rooms and you could take a shower. So it was giving them that dignity that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have some good stories and you also have some bad stories. You know, you figured out that, you know, the first few that we provided a job that they were working there, they got fired after a little bit.
Okay.
You know, because you realize that they couldn't handle that pace.
Sure.
And so, but coming back to your question, I think it was a very profound experience that I had when I was, I had a mentor, his name is Paul.
Okay.
Fortunately passed away, but it's really important for me to share this story. I was playing tennis at his house in Palm Beach, and I was giving some lessons here and there. And he was a nonprofit guy. And he was the president of a nonprofit called First Serve.
Okay, yeah.
And I was so excited, and I was telling him what I was doing on Friday nights. And back then, we were not incorporated.
Right.
And we just needed a few bucks to buy, you know, the burritos or some sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget it. I was telling him about it. And I said, okay, Umberto, after the game, let's, you wait 1 second, wait me here. So the game finished and everybody goes away. I wait in the table. He comes back with his checkbook. And, you know, he signed, he put his name, his signature, and then he put $1,000. And he gave it to me and he said, Umberto, I see your excitement and I'm giving you this because I believe in you.
Mm-hmm.
And now do something with this money.
Awesome.
So I took the money. I talked with Andrew. And we said, okay, let's file for nonprofit. And with that amount was exactly what we needed to file and to build a website.
That's amazing. Yeah. So, I mean, sometimes all it takes is just one person to believe in, you know, everything that you're doing. And I feel like sometimes that kickstarts things and everything just kind of falls into place after that, which is awesome. So that's great. I love that. So from that point on then, you incorporate. Mm-hmm. And what's the hardest thing to do from there? Donors? I mean, again, you said there are costs to do this. So, you know, how did you go about that?
Well, the first 2 years were pretty easy because I was still in school and mm-hmm. nobody was getting paid. Andrew and I were just volunteering our time the first 2 years. And then when I graduated in 22, had to decide, you know, what are we going to do with this?
Sure.
And Andrew, you know, Andrew decided to step out and to pursue a different career.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what, I'm just going to go full on. And in the meantime, I had a few other key people. One of them is the vice president. Her name is Bela.
Mm-hmm.
And she really helped me, you know, starting it from scratch. She was almost a co-founder. And so the toughest part back then was, okay, how do we come up with the funds to be able to live with it?
Sure.
But also, you know, obviously focusing on the impact.
Absolutely.
You know, so figuring that out as was really important. But, you know, timing was everything, because back then I had one of our donors that introduced me to one of our board members now. His name is Bill Hobbs.
Okay.
And he started a nonprofit in 97 called Urban Youth Impact.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Which was, you know, it's an amazing operation in Palm Beach County. And, you know, I sat down with Bill, and Bill told me, okay, you need to do this, this, and that.
Yeah, it's huge.
And this was back in 22, in May. I just graduated.
Awesome.
So it gave me the blueprint.
Awesome. And that's so important, because sometimes I feel like if you don't have like a really great mentor or somebody to kind of like show you the path and hold your hand, it's a lot, as you know, starting up a nonprofit. There's a lot to do. So that's really great. Okay. So let's dive into some of the programs then that you've put in place. So it started out just, you know, handing out food on a Friday night, which I think is really neat. Do you guys still do that at like a set time?
Yes, every Friday at 7 p.m.
That was one thing that struck me because, you know, I've had nonprofits on here that are like food pantries, for example, where, you know, the people are coming to you. I think it's really unique and cool that you're going to them because, A, I think they're expecting you, you know, and they're you build a relationship with them. You're not just, you know, handing out food and feeding somebody, which is important, but I think that, you know, probably on their end, there's some bit of comfort knowing that like, hey, my friends are coming, you know, coming to see me tonight. And I think that's really neat. So I'm glad to hear that, because I wondered, I'm like, I wonder if they're still doing like a certain specific time, which I think is really unique and probably part of your recipe for success.
And, you know, Janelle, it's really happening in a different location at the same time.
Yeah.
And how it came about, it was, you know, we had an Instagram account and people started to following us. And some people from Orlando were like, I want to do it in Orlando.
Right.
Can you teach me how? Some people in Santa Monica and in Los Angeles, let me understand how you do this. I have a bunch of people that would love to do it.
That's so cool.
And so we created a playbook that was telling you basically step by step how to manage volunteers, how you handle a conversation with somebody that was on drugs, how you were getting a sponsorship from a Chick-fil-A or a food pantry that was local to you. So all of those step by step. And then we started educating people about it. And we started to developing leaders all around, you know, the U.S. at the beginning, because we started with the West Coast. Our second location where we were doing this homeless outreach was Los Angeles.
Okay.
And now in the U.S., we're in Salt Lake City and Orlando.
Because do you have seven? Well, how many places in the U.S. do you have? Because I think
four.
Okay. And then you also have cities abroad.
Yes.
Also, which I think is amazing. I'm like, how does this happen?
Yes. So same thing happened also in Buenos Aires in Argentina.
Yeah.
And Brazil, we have two locations in Rio and in Sao Paulo.
Okay.
And also in Italy, in Rome, where I'm from.
Really?
And my mother is the leader that she's doing this on Wednesday. Yeah.
That's so amazing. And you know what? I think that's so great that you're doing this, because for me, I have had other nonprofits come in and they're just like, you know, people want to do this in their city. They see what we're doing and they get excited about it. But, you know, sometimes it's hard to relay that and put it together, or sometimes something that works here might not work in other places. So I think it's amazing that you put together this whole playbook and that it's successfully working. Like it's actually doing what it's supposed to be
doing. It's amazing, because we have several, you know, hundreds of volunteers all over the world, and they're so attached to the mission.
Yes.
And they do it because they want to do it, not because they have to.
Absolutely.
And also how they get the food, you know, it's really, it's not a really expensive operation, But still, if you look at the impact,
that's huge.
That's huge, because it's not just about the people that we feed, but it's about, as I mentioned earlier, that perspective change that you have. And, you know, to look back, you know, I know that before recording, we were talking, I was asking you about your kids. And I think that that's something that we really are dialed in on right yeah. now, is to empowering the young generation to
it's
give
huge.
Back.
Yes.
And so what I'm really targeting on with the organization is to go to school, universities, and have their kids coming and volunteering for us.
Right, because to your point, it's an easy thing to start up. Like, it's almost like a club under your umbrella of the give back community, where, you know, easily groups of kids can go out and really take this on. And it's just such a like rewarding thing, you know, if they could get involved and see like the impact what you're talking about. So I think that's amazing. Tell me about the school in Rio, and why did you pick Rio? You have a school there that you guys are like working with, right?
Yes. So it's a school that is fully sponsored by Give Back Community.
That's amazing.
And it's called Give Back School.
Mm-hmm.
And how it came about, I was in 22, around the same time that I made the decision of pursuing Give Back full time.
Sure.
Post graduation with my best friend Jorge, we said, okay, let's go to Rio for fun.
It always starts with fun. like Rocco's Tacos.
Exactly. So we said, okay, let's go. 8 days vacation in Rio.
Mm-hmm.
We go, and a friend of mine from Brazil, she told me, Estela, which now she serves in the board of directors of Give Back Community Brazil, she told me, you should go and check out a favela community. Now, for those that don't know what a favela community is, it's like a slum.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, you have a really poor situation in those communities, lack of hygiene, but most importantly, there's a lot of criminality mm-hmm. coming off of it. Most of the times, the favela is controlled by the drug cartel.
Got it.
So what happened, I got to see one of these slums called Morro dos Prazeres, and it's very near Christ the Redeemer. So it's a really nice area.
Yeah.
But then you get into the slum, and it had a tour guide. So she set me up with a tour guide. I get to check it out, and I was really impressed because, you know, these slums, most of the time, they're on top of the hill. So it's so juxtaposed because you see a beautiful view of Rio, but then you get to see a lack of infrastructure, and you get to see all of this lack of hygiene. And,
right.
And at the same time, I remember, I'll never forget it, the first time I went, I was shocked because I saw this kid that was 12 years old with the machine gun in his hand.
Oh, yeah.
And he was recruited by the drug cartel, and mm-hmm. it's really normal.
Yeah.
So that stood out to me, but I couldn't do anything because I didn't have the capacity, you know, financially, we didn't have the capacity to support.
Sure.
But I came back after 6 months because I fell in love with Rio.
Mm-hmm.
And this time I asked my tour guide to be more intentional about showing me all of the projects. They call them projects, basically the local nonprofits that they have inside the slum.
Okay.
So he shows me a couple. One of them was a dance school that they were bringing the kids to dance for free. One mm-hmm. of them was a computer lab, which was literally a room that was this big with 3 laptops that were donated, and that was their computer lab.
Nice.
Kids don't, you know, they don't have computers
no
over there.
No access to that,
right?
Yeah, of course.
And then he brings me to this school that it was a 2 floors school with the church at the bottom of 3 classrooms mm-hmm. and then an upper area where the kids used to eat. So like a playground.
Right.
And I got to see it and wow, this is an amazing school. There's already, like, the classrooms are set up. Mm-hmm. There's a blackboard, there's everything, but where are the kids? Where are the
it's
teachers?
Empty.
It's empty.
Right.
He said, Jackson was the tour guide. And he now works for us full time over there.
Oh, that's so awesome.
He tells me, you know, we had a fund and somebody stole the money from the fund. So we cannot pay the teachers.
Yeah.
We cannot pay for the food of the kids. We cannot have the school.
So you have a whole shell there with
was
no,
empty.
No money to run it.
Nobody was even thinking about it
wow.
anymore. So I went back, you know, in the meantime, I was asking him, okay, how much does it cost to have a teacher?
Mm-hmm.
How much is a meal for a kid? How many kids can we have? What's the capacity of the school? I went back, raised the money, and started the school back on. So we did the enrollment. The kids are from 5 to 13 years old.
Awesome.
And now we have 50 children.
That's
but
a
the
lot.
Most important part is that this is not a, this is an after school. And I think it's really important. This is why I'm emphasizing to you, because the government, the Brazilian government, offers public education.
Sure.
So these kids, they already go to school.
Right.
But it's after school.
I'm thinking now what you just told me about right. the 12-year-old with the machine gun.
Exactly.
What option do they have?
Right. So the more they are exposed to that, and most of these kids, we were getting some statistics, true statistics. Mm-hmm. 86% of our kids, they're raised by a single parent or by a grandma.
Yeah.
They don't have, most of the time, a father figure.
Right.
Sometimes they don't even have parents.
Right.
And so what do they do after school? They hang out.
Mm-hmm.
When they go and when they hang out, it's very easy for them to be approached.
Absolutely.
By the drug cartel.
Yes.
And so the school, it's such an important environment because they arrive at 3 and they go home at 6. Not to mention the fact that at the end of the school, we offer them a meal. So this is really important because most of the parents or the household are not able to afford sometimes. So the kids go home and they have to eat the next day.
Right.
They are not able to have dinner.
Right.
And so just the fact, and I think this is the number one reason why the kids come and the parents or whoever provides for them wants them to go, is because of the food. It's not because of the education.
Sure.
You know, we have 5 teachers that are there every day. We have an English teacher. We try to work on that a lot.
Absolutely.
But I have to say, to be honest with you, that the food is the most important component.
Yeah, and to a parent, you know, if they're working or they're not home yet, it's like they're there, they're somewhere safe, they're getting fed, you know, and if they get, you know, exposed to some other things there that could help them down the road, I think that's, who wouldn't want that for their kids?
But, you know, something, Janelle, it's really important for me to emphasize is how it connects back to youth.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there's something about gratitude that heals.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like when we, my case, when for the first time I got to experience what it meant by feeding our homeless friends, I really got to see, wow, there's some problems that I think are my problems that would probably be a dream for them to have my problems.
Right.
And it put me out of that perspective,
mm-hmm.
where it's all about me.
Right.
And especially now with the isolation that we have going on with social medias and with our phone, especially young kids.
Yes.
And I'm, you know, I do that as well.
So do I.
You know, it's really important to understand that that is not the real reality. And you want to experience reality, go and come and help him, help us feed the homeless. You know, go and come with us and, you know, in a children's hospital and get to see what it really means to
yes.
suffer. And I think that this is a really powerful thing that I try to bring people to experience. Not to have pity, but really to see how lucky we are.
Absolutely. I love everything that you're doing. We could probably talk for 3 more hours about all the stories that you have. And I would love to even have you back and talk about some of your, you know, some of your success stories in all the various parts of the world. But anything you want to leave us with, one final thought?
You know, like I mentioned earlier, it's really important to have a voice,
mm-hmm.
and to have the guts to express it. And I feel, like I mentioned, your job is really important with this podcast, and we need to have more of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're welcome to come back anytime. Mm-hmm. And like I said, Wednesdays are my favorite day because I really get to see all the amazing work that, you know, you guys in our people just like you in our neighborhood are doing. So mm-hmm. thank you so much. Your story is extremely inspirational to anyone listening. And I can't wait to tell all my friends about the organization. So you guys follow along, check out their website. Like Umberto said, they have an awesome website. You'll see the pictures on there and just feel like immediately connected. There's some really great information there. So get involved and, you know, let's help out and make the world a better place. And we appreciate you joining us here again on 501CTV. And we hope you'll join us next time. And a special thank you also to Kana House Studios, Wellington's first and only social media content creation studio. And thank you again, Umberto.